USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, welcome, and I appreciate you being on with us here for a while to answer some questions. U.S. farmers, of course, are interested in when Mexico's tariffs on pork, cheese, and other products might be reduced or eliminated. What progress is there on tariff issues among Canada, Mexico, and the U.S.?
Tom, we're currently working on that. As you know, this was a not part of the USMCA agreement, but we understand while we want to protect our steel industry, these retaliatory tariffs placed on ag products have been very detrimental to our ag industry, and our President, White House, the USTR, and others are working on getting these off as soon as possible, and hopefully we'll make progress very, very soon.
So in light of some of the resolution on trade issues with Canada and Mexico, how will tariff aid payments be affected by this, and are those payments negated by the USMCA?
Well, that remains to be seen, obviously, whether or not we can remove the retaliatory tariffs or not. Currently, there's no real impact on the mitigation efforts that we can see, but we're calculating these efforts on an ongoing basis, and when we consider this next tranche of mitigation money, we will we'll calculate what impact the tariffs have had. We, as most farmers will tell you, we would much rather have the tariffs off than a government check of any kind of mitigation money, but then that's what we'll work for.
What is the status currently of the mitigation payments?
Farmers are applying, and we're getting money out the door every week. The mitigation efforts are open for those that have finished their harvest can come in and certify their production, and certainly in beans can apply for the mitigation, and other crops, if they've already harvested wheat, can do that as well.
How will breakthroughs such as USMCA and further talks with Japan impact the U.S. trade dispute with China, and could it be the nudge that they need to come to a resolution?
Well, we're hopeful it can, Tom. We believe it's a good template. It deals with some issues that have never been dealt with before in trade discussions. That's biotech issues and standards of equivalency of food safety and those types of things. So we think in a modern technology of different protocols for food safeties and different things, that it can be a template for not only China, but certainly for the EU as well as Japan and South Korea. We're approaching it from sort of a dominoes effect, to move one at a time and continue getting first downs until we score a deal with China. Hopefully it'll be reflected to China that we're serious about reforming our trade policies, and if they would simply play by the rules, then we're happy to trade with them.
You mentioned the first downs. Just characterize the trade situation currently and how it's progressing, how you feel about some of these some of the advancements that have been made in trade issues.
Well, when President Trump came in, he had heard on the campaign that NAFTA had hurt American jobs, and it had. When you look at the manufacturing that had gone to Mexico with zero tariffs, it was depleting our manufacturing sector in the United States. Agriculture generally overall had benefited from it, except maybe from the vegetable areas in the South and Florida, Georgia, and others along the border there. But these agreements have been beneficial. They've recharacterized it. The president was persuaded not to withdraw from NAFTA, but to renegotiate it and promise a better deal. And that's what we have. We have better access into the Canadian market with not only dairy products, but eggs and poultry, as well as our wheat grading issue in the Northern Plains along the border, and another little wine dispute with British Columbia. So I think, again, it lines up with the fact that the president's committed to be a tough negotiator. I think he's used his private sector business negotiating skills. The United States is a huge market, and he's right when he says these other countries have taken advantage of it, including the European Union, that allows their products to come in here virtually tariff-free while they still have protectionist attitudes and barriers to our agricultural products, not only there, but many other countries around the world that have been allies that we've spent billions of dollars defending have not treated us as favored customers.
On E15 and the RFS, what kind of concessions will be made to the oil industry in that regard?
Well, again, I don't know that any concessions were contemplated. When you see the RIN prices, we believe that the concessions made through the small refinery waivers were concession enough. And I've had conversations with Acting Administrator Wheeler that we would be looking at tightening up those kind of waivers to make sure they're truly hardship cases that fit the legal definition without opening up to everyone. And no other concessions. I think, again, the transparency of the RIN market will go a long way for those people who have to trade in the RINs market, those people who have to purchase RINs, those people who are selling RINs. I think the transparency inclusions of the new deal will help both sides in a very transparent market. We're used to that in commodities in the livestock markets, but in the RIN market, we haven't had that, and it's caused some real ability to manipulate that market in a very unfair way.
What is the what is your general take on the benefits to farmers of year-round E15?
Well, I think it's hard to be overstated. I think, again, the what the industry has done, what the corn sector has done in helping our energy independence back years ago when it started, it was a much different balance sheet regarding energy. Since we've allowed people to drill and to frack and to become energy independent and the ability to sell E15 year-round, no one can invest in equipment and assets that you can only use a few months out of the year. So we believe the American consumer, with more choice, you're going to have lower prices. As petroleum prices go up, our ethanol prices will be lower, and they'll have a better deal there. It's a clean burning fuel that we think will be readily accepted and work its way into the marketplace across the country. So we think that will grow corn demand significantly as people get used to E15, as our vehicles continue to be made to use that very easily. And overall, it's all good news.
Your agency and the FDA have been meeting to hammer out regulations on lab-produced or cultured, or some say fake, meat. What's your take about which agency will be in charge, and what will the regulations look like?
We don't know what the regulations will look like now, but it's interesting. We just are hosting a meeting today and tomorrow here at USDA, along with FDA, over this issue specifically. It will be a dual jurisdiction. The FDA has a responsibility in making sure the processes and protocols are safe in the beginning, and USDA has a responsibility to make sure the commercialization, the production, and the packaging is safe to consumers, just as we've done with poultry and pork and beef for years. So there's going to be dual jurisdiction, and I think it's incumbent upon both of our agencies to show that different agencies in the federal government can work together in a collaborative way to give guidance ahead of time as this new technology is being developed and to determine what its utilization and how it can be used to go forward.
You've promised a 5% USDA budget cut. How's that going to happen?
Well, we believe, again, the president asked all of us to cut 5%. I think that's what to get this deficit in order, to get our budget in order, to get our debt in order. That's what we ought to be doing. And as governor of Georgia for 8 years, I had less money to spend in five out of those 8 years in 2003 to 2011. So any good agency, any good manager, any good secretary can look into their budgets and do more with less, certainly 5%, and put that to Congress, and let's get together between the administration, the president, and Congress, and a realistic budget that continues to drive down our expenditures. The economy is growing thanks to President Trump's policies, economic policies. Now the time is to focus on fiscal discipline, and we're prepared to do that in the USDA. We can do that.
And then finally, Secretary, you've been a while on the job now. How do you like it, and how do you see your footprint in this agency?
Well, it's not really about my footprint. It's about what the USDA does to serve not only farmers but consumers. And it's a massive agency with over 100,000 people across the United States and the world, and providing food safety, providing research, education, U.S. Forest Service with millions of acres of public lands there, from our farm programs and FPAC and the FSA and NRCS offices, helping farmers be more productive in our rural development and communities, making rural prosperity a real come true in many communities that need assistance, and as well as the food nutrition part of supplemental nutrition or food stamps. So it's an exciting place to be. There are a lot of decisions to make. There are a lot of policies to make sure. My goal here is to make USDA the most effective, the most efficient, the most customer-focused agency in the federal government. I think we're making strides toward that. Tom, it's good to talk with you today, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.